Welcome to the Canadian SME Small Business Podcast, the go-to source for Canadian entrepreneurs and business leaders. Join us as we dive deep into the heart of Canada's business community, bringing you inspiring stories, cutting-edge insights, and practical advice from our nation's brightest minds in marketing, innovation, leadership, and tech. Whether you're launching a startup or scaling your enterprise, our mission is to empower your journey with wisdom that makes a difference. Let's grow together, right here, right now.
Whether you're just getting started or already established, UPS is here to help you make the most of your time. Their services, tools, expertise, and team of UPS Small Business Ambassadors can help businesses of all sizes simplify processes, improve customer experience, and guide you on the path to growth. My name is Elaine Tancomo, founder of Easy Daisies, Daily Visual Schedules for Kids, and I want to invite you to visit ups.com to learn more and save up to 52% or more on shipping. This is a paid advertisement.
Hi, everyone. This is Maheen, and welcome to the Canadian SME Small Business Podcast, where we bring you insights from leaders shaping the future of Canadian businesses. Today's episode explores digital transformation in the architecture, engineering, and construction sectors and its role in addressing Canada's housing crisis. Our guest today is Arash Shahi, the CEO and co-founder of ACO Innovation Lab. And with a PhD in civil engineering, Arash leads initiatives that connect diverse stakeholders to drive innovation in the AEC industry. He's launched multiple ventures that are focused on real-world challenges in construction, real estate, and more. Arash, it's a pleasure to have you on the podcast. How are you?
Pleasure to be with you here. Recovering from a cold, so my voice is in and out, but happy to be here and talk to you about what's happening in the built environment.
I really appreciate your time, Arash. And again, thank you so much for joining us. Arash, we know that digital tools, they are transforming lots of sectors, including project management, productivity, and compliance, specifically in the AEC industry. So let's begin our discussion by really exploring what drives this shift towards the digital transformation. So tell us more about, you know, what inspired you to create the ACO Innovation Lab and what specific needs or challenges were you hoping to address within the AEC industry?
No, thanks for that question. Before starting ACO, I was at the University of Toronto for about 6 years, worked at a research center there, Building Innovation Research Center, and did a lot of good work with fantastic faculty and graduate students that we had at U of T. But there were a few challenges that kind of came up during our tenure at U of T. One was the startup ecosystem. So we had a few inquiries every month from different startups within Canada and outside who were looking at connections being made to the industry and government and how we could help them kind of sell within our market. So a lot of them were solutions looking for a problem, if you will. And I fundamentally kind of disagree with that approach in the sense that we have enough problems in our industry, and we have a lot of talented folks that can tackle those problems. And we wanted to start with the industry first. So that was the first gap we wanted to fill was instead of having a whole bunch of solutions and looking for problems, can we start with the problems and build solutions that match those problems? So that was one gap. The other gap was that in an academic setting, especially at U of T, we couldn't hire developers, like software developers or any full-time employees, if you will, mostly working with graduate students. And the thing with graduate students is that they graduate and move on. So a lot of good work was done on several projects, but then they were sitting on shelves. So commercialization of research was really a challenge. And a lot of graduate students don't want to go into entrepreneurship and startups and all that. They want to kind of move on with their careers, whether it's through a PhD or an academic position or industry position. So there was a lot of talent and a lot of IP that could be commercialized that we could just never commercialize in a U of T setting. And all of that after a number of years, COVID hit. So in 2020, right, when COVID hit, our industry had an awakening, if you will, in that we realized almost overnight that we have to digitize and we just can't continue shoving paper around. So that was the time where our industry partners and some of our government partners kind of encouraged us to do something about it. And ACO Innovation Lab was basically formed as an industry-driven R&D shop. So instead of having research driven by academia, this is research driven by industry, in collaboration, mm-hmm. obviously, with academia and government, but with the sole purpose of commercializing research and putting solutions on the market that can solve real world problems as quickly as possible. So that was basically the beginning of ECHO.
We love the motivation. Now, it's really inspiring to hear how ECHO is strategically addressing these industry challenges and continually, you know, evolving to meet these growing needs over time. I know that you mentioned collaboration with the industry stakeholders like academia and government, but how does ECHO really collaborate to create these digital solutions with these stakeholders?
Sure. So just to give an example, we created a MyTax cluster. For those who may not be familiar, MyTax is a federal research funding mechanism that basically leverages industry money with government money to support graduate students. So we put together a five-year research grant with MyTax and six universities in Canada. So we've got ETS Montreal, Carleton, in Ottawa, Waterloo, TMU, York University, and UBC kind of got together with ECHO Innovation Lab as the industry partner, Six Academia, and MyTax representing the government. We put together a 99-unit, five-year research program, specifically around AI-enabled digital twins in the built environment. So we can talk about what that is later on. But that was the foundation of the collaboration. This is basically, by definition, industry, academic, government coming together. Another project that we did was called One Ontario, and that was basically unifying the development approval process in the province of Ontario. We got 40 different government agencies, industry groups, and academics who endorsed that initiative. So this is basically trying to find the common core that everybody agrees on, right? And trying to build coalitions around that common core. That's basically the philosophy that we've followed. And those two examples, the AI digital twin cluster and the One Ontario coalition, we called it, was two of the successful implementations of this collaboration between these three entities. And a lot of interesting stuff has come from that collaboration. So that's basically the method we've used in creating that government, academic, and industry coalitions. The challenge is, you know, without the coalitions like this, each industry member is innovating by themselves, and they're trying to find an academic partner. And imagine you have a construction company, and you want to, or an architecture company, and you want to investigate and do R&D in a particular niche. You don't even know which academic to go with. Right. So at U of T, we would get, because of where we were located, we'd get a lot of incoming inquiries. But the reality was there were folks at ETS Montreal or Vancouver, UBC, that were much better equipped for that particular problem. But a construction company in Toronto would have no access to the folks at ETS or Carleton or anywhere else. So the idea with ECHO was that for our own industry, and our industries are ECHO is architecture, engineering, construction, and owners, including real estate. For these industries, we become a hub for connecting industry, government, academia. So if an industry partner wants to do research in this area, they would come to us and we would direct them to the right academic that has that expertise and to the right government program that can provide the financial support potentially for those projects.
It's really clear that collaboration drives meaningful change, and you've given some great examples to prove that, and you've really fueled innovation in ways that no single organization could achieve alone. So thank you so much for sharing those insights, Arush. Now let's dive into how these partnerships are directly impacting the Canada's housing crisis, because with the housing crisis at the forefront, many AEC companies, they're turning to technology for solutions. So let's look at how ECHO is contributing to this effort. Sarosh, how is ECHO Innovation Lab addressing the housing crisis, and what role do data and digital tools play in this effort?
Yeah, housing crisis has been a topic of conversation for every level of government, right? So we've got municipal governments, provincial and federal, running on a housing platform. A lot of promises, a lot of talk in terms of things that's going to be done, But when we look at numbers, the numbers just aren't there in terms of housing supply. There's a number of reasons. I mean, the whole housing crisis as a whole probably deserves its own discussion in terms of what's preventing housing being built. But the research that we did at UFT, 4 of those 6 years, we were focused on the development approval process. So looking at international best practices, what's happening around the world. Did some pilots here with some municipal and conservation authorities in Ontario, and continued that work in One Ontario at the Eco Innovation Lab. And bottom line, what it comes down to is access to data, right? And we have policymakers who are putting policy out there without really knowing the impact of their policy, and they can't really measure the impact of their policy because that data is just isn't available. So access to data, transparency on the process, to me, those are the biggest issues that hinder housing development. And once you have data, then you can have a debate, right? Once you know where housing gets stuck, once you know what is the cost of housing, what is the regulatory cost, what is the construction cost, then we can have debates. Then we can have discussions around, okay, what are the different ways to tackle it, right? So then different parties can take different positions, right? But it's come down right now, everybody likes housing, everybody supports housing, yet nobody does anything about it, right?
Because right.
To do. So that's the biggest challenge that we're trying to solve is A, provide digital tools, and we can talk about some of the tools that we developed. But first and foremost is getting transparency and data accessibility out there so we can reduce the risk of land development. When you look at a typical land development project right now in GTA, 5 to 8 years from the time you decide to develop to the time the project is ready. And that's average, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have projects that are well over 10 years, right? The construction period is only 2 years, 2-3 years maximum, right? But there is 4, 5, 6, sometimes 7, 8 years of regulatory permitting and development approval process, right? So yeah. You have a $50 million asset that's sitting there for 5 years. And just so that we can go through the different processes that have been put together and just to get permission to build, right? And that the cost of carrying that asset for that amount of time and the cost that's associated with the risk of not knowing when you get your permit, all that cost is then transferred to the consumer, right? So right. If you can cut down that cost and cut down that time to, there's no reason it couldn't be in weeks or months. So that's really the focus of Eco Innovation Lab, is being able to cut the red tape, cut the bureaucracy, provide streamlined data-driven tools that can actually make the process a lot more transparent than what it is, and therefore make it shorter. Our vision is that by putting light on the issues with data, then we can keep our government accountable and say, hey, here's the problem, here's the data, what are you going to do about it, right? Mm. And if you're not going to do about it, what is the next guy going to do about it, right? And keeping these politicians accountable for actions that actually matter when it comes to housing. And I don't think there's an entity today that's keeping our politicians honest, if you will, on when it comes to housing, right? There's also reports left and right, but there's not a single voice that's really keeping everybody accountable. And that's really where we come in and we want to kind of take that position.
This targeted use of data and digital tools to streamline housing development is quite fascinating, Arush. And you're right. I mean, data-driven approaches, they're clearly the way to make meaningful impact on Canada's housing crisis. And we'd love to delve deep into how ECHO is paving the way forward. So let's explore the pioneering startups that ECHO has launched to push the industry ahead, because I know that they each address a unique challenge at an AEC. So let's discuss some of these innovations. Arush, could you please tell us some of the startups that ECHO has launched and how they're impacting the AEC industry?
Sure, we'd love to. This one I can talk for hours, so feel free to cut me off. But the first startup that we did was in collaboration with Ontario Building Official Association. So these are all the building officials in all the municipalities in Ontario. And they were asking us, they say, okay, you're a digital transformation partner. We say, yes. They're like, okay, can you digitize the entire building code? And we said, well, define digitize. And they said, well, right now the building code is 2 volumes, a couple inches thick. And every time there's an update, we get mailed the copy of update, and then we have to open our binders and take the pages out and put these pages in. And there were milk trays in some of the inspector cars to kind of carry the building codes around. So we said, okay, fine, well, it's a PDF file. We'll take it, put it on an app. Like, what could go wrong? So then we learned why it wasn't done before. So that was the lessons learned. But we did put the app, put the code on an app. It took 18 months to go through the regulatory challenges of making the code available. And I can talk for another half an hour on how Ministry of Municipal and Housing pushed us to National Research Council, to push us back to Ministry of Housing. And then just back and forth to Queen's publishing, and somebody else is making money printing this, so you can make it digital. If you make it digital, there's copyright, and then who has the copyright? It was 18 months of back and forth. Wow. And to finally get the permission to actually make the entire building code digitally available. So we put an app out there called My Building Code, and then now as a pilot to test the market. Several hundred users came on it right away. It was a very good feedback, and it's now known as Trax Codes. So that was one of the startups that kind of spun out of My Building Code, turned into Trax, and as a startup. And they now have the Ontario Building Code, the National Building Code, Energy Codes, Fire Codes, and they've now integrated co-pilots into it, so you can have a conversation with the code. There's lots of cool stuff happening with Trax. They have a fascinating technical team that are running it. So that was one of the earliest stage startups that we kind of worked with just to get the building code solution out there. More recently, one of the more recent projects that has spun out of Echo Innovation Hub is LandLogic. And LandLogic is that data normalization platform for everything related to land and housing development, right? So one of the challenges that you have today is that you want to develop a piece of land or you want to build on your existing home. And you have to go to up to 15 different groups that have comments and rights on making comments on your application. This could be conservation groups, municipalities, upper tier, lower tier, long list of different groups. So, and everybody has their own data and have their own GIS layers and their own requirements, and navigating that complexity is a complete mess. So what LandLogic has done is we've unified and we've centralized all that data into one database. So you can pick a parcel of land and you can identify as a homeowner even, what are the risks associated with your land? If you're in a floodplain, if you're in a heritage, if you have other restrictions on it, what are the opportunities? So government announces this new program of 4-plexes and 5-plexes. Does that apply to your land? What can you do with that? So it's basically empowering the homeowner, but also all the pros that work with homeowners with all the data that they need to make informed decisions, basically. So that's what LandLogic is. And there's a few other projects that are coming up. There's a 3D remote inspection platform in close collaboration with the First Nations of Canada, so that we can we don't have to send inspectors out to sites anymore. We can just do remote inspection. There's immersive captures happening on site. There's a real estate brokerage, Acorn, that's spinning out of Acorn Innovation Lab. And that's basically looking at democratizing real estate transactions and how can we, again, empower the buyers and sellers with the data and information that they need so that, you know, the commission structure that's in real estate is way overdue for a reform. So that's what they're looking at. So there's different solutions that are coming up, but LandLogic is our main data play that's basically going to be partnering with a lot of different groups in providing that unified data and the transparency that's much needed in the housing sector.
No, this is really inspiring to hear about so many different ventures and, you know, the future startups that are coming up, Arush. And it's great how each startup really adds incredible value to the AEC landscape as well. Now let's shift to the role of government in supporting innovations like these, because government support is so crucial in fostering innovation, especially in these regulated sectors like AEC. How can federal and provincial governments support innovation in the sector, and which policies would have the biggest impact, Arush?
That's a tough one in terms of you almost want government out of the way, right? So if they don't get in our way, industry can solve its own problems. But the challenge is government is a player at many of these different steps throughout the housing life cycle. Including permitting and approvals. So one of the challenges that we have with the government is that we have a number of government champions within the government who want to bring technology, but the majority of our government are very risk averse, right? So
right.
They do not want to take any risks. There is really no motivation for any source of innovation, right? There's often referred to as golden handcuffs, right? So you've got government employees with good pensions, and nobody just wants to rock the boat, right? And so there's really no incentive that we can see for our government to innovate. And then we have different levels of government that just give money to each other, right? So we had CMHC that came out with $4 billion with a B, to incentivize housing, and that money went to municipalities. So it's one pocket to the other. It's very difficult to get that out there to the industry to actually innovate and bring solutions. And so you're giving money and incentive to organizations that have no incentive to innovate, right? So that's first problem. Perhaps the biggest problem, though, is the procurement, right?
Right.
The procurement on the public sector is absolutely crazy. Right. The kind of hoops that you got to jump into for procurement. I'll give an example. In many municipalities, if you do a pilot with the municipality to test an innovative solution, you are now forbidden to actually sell to that municipality. So it's just the most bizarre procurement restrictions. And nobody has yet gone after the procurement. You want to. And we've had a ministry of red tape reduction in our current provincial government. But so theoretically, that's what they would be doing. But there just doesn't seem to be an appetite, politically or otherwise, to cut through that red tape and actually build the foundation that's needed for innovation. Innovation, by definition, may fail, right?
Right.
So you need to have the appetite to try different things and go through iterations until you get something working. Right. Whereas a lot of our government agencies today are looking for the big five consulting companies, and because nobody gets fired for working with the top consulting firm. Right. But God forbid, if you test something new and if it doesn't work or if it doesn't do what it was supposed to do, then you're liable. Right. So as a government employee, I would say, why would I even risk that? Right. So that because, again, the structure for encouraging innovation isn't there. And we've got some bizarre procurement rules in our government that almost forbid any sort of innovation to take place. So I think one thing they could be doing is looking at what procurement mechanisms could be made available to those folks within government who are actually pro-innovation and want to test new things and try new things. And this is the one thing, if we can make the government hear that one point, I think we can move the needle in terms of adopting innovation in our government sector.
Absolutely. Now, supportive policies really could open new doors for growth and advancement in AEC, and collaborations with the government can be a powerful catalyst for innovation in the industry as well. Now, let's explore Eco Innovation Lab's future vision and its role in shaping the industry. Arush, what's next for your lab, and where do you see the industry heading in the next few years?
And there was a quote that I always like to use, and it's, there are decades where nothing happens and there are weeks where decades happen. And I think that's where we are in our industry, right? I think next 5 to 10 years, our industry will be almost unrecognizable from what it is today. So there's a lot of change happening, and it's got to a point where it cannot be stopped, in my view, right? So digitization is here. So if you're within our industry and you're still looking at paper-based workflows, not paper workflows, but paper-based workflows, right? So in our industry, we got a lot of digital solutions that just replicate what was done on paper before. That doesn't count.
Right.
So if you're dealing with any of that, that's got to go, right? 5 to 10 years, maybe closer to 5 years, none of that will be here. AI is already here. So right. Computation power has got to a point where we are implementing AI in every aspect of our lives. And construction industry cannot be immune to that. So AI is here. Automation and robotics are here. I just participated in an R&D roadmap for construction automation and robotics in Canada last week. And there's a lot of interested parties that are heavily invested in construction robotics. And that's going to be a thing. We've got humanoid robots coming in by about 5 to 10 years. I think they're going to be mainstream. So the interesting aspect of being on the frontiers is that you don't know what the future will look like. But as you start coming, kind of progressing, then new heights and new visions come to focus, right? So I think within the next 5 years or so, we know that digitization is going to be completely here. We know AI and robotics are going to be here. And I think the role that Aecon Innovation Lab and other players within this sector can play is to guide the industry through this digitization process, right? One of the challenges is that if you have a big construction company, you probably have 5 startups knocking on your door every month, right? So do you really have the bandwidth to try all this new innovation, right? And there's no shortage of innovation. So how do you actually filter all that noise? And how do you pick the right innovation that actually connects with the tools that you already have? And that requires a level of sophistication that not a lot of industry companies may have. So this is where Aecon Innovation Labs of the world come in to kind of cut through the noise, and for each sector, pick and choose what solutions are the essentials, must-haves that you can kind of put together, and what are the data exchange requirements, and what are the digital sustainability requirements that you need to put in place so that all the solutions that are coming in actually talk to each other, right? And that you end up with 500 different tools that don't talk to each other, because that's over commitment of technology then, right? So that's really the role that we want to play going forward, is like guiding, like being in the middle of academia, industry, and government, guiding all parties towards a certain unified goal for our industry as a whole. Because if everybody pulls in a different direction, then we can't really move forward that quickly.
Well, the future of AEC looks promising, and I'll be honest, especially with the visionary leaders like yourself, Arish, that are paving the way and working so hard. And it's really exciting to imagine the industry's potential for growth and transformation. Now, as we close, Arish, what is that final piece of advice that you'd like to give to small businesses and innovators that are hoping to make an impact in the AEC sector?
Well, don't give up. I think that's my one advice. It can be discouraging at times. We got to be realistic. There are forces at play that don't benefit from innovation. So we need to be aware of those forces. And there are industry giants that have monopoly over the space. They're benefiting from this status quo. There may be consulting operations that benefit from doing the same thing over and over and over again every year for all the different municipalities and groups. So there are conflicting and competing forces. But I think my one advice is persistence, right? You gotta stay at it and look for champions, because even in the darkest places, in government agencies that are just not moving one inch, there is still people. At the end of the day, it's people in there, right? And you can find people that actually care and can partner and innovate. And I think those champions and those advisors that I've had personally and corporately as part of Aecon have been the force that kind of keep us going, right? So I think looking for those champions, and at the end of the day, you may have to hear 99 no's before you hear yes. So right. The faster you can work through your no's, the sooner you're going to get to the yes. So I think going in with the expectation that you need to hear 99 no's before you hear a yes kind of makes it a lot less painful. I think from a digitization perspective in our sector, the next 5 to 10 years are going to be amazing. There's going to be a lot of opportunities, and there are going to be opportunities we don't even know about today that are going to come up in a few years. So I think it's really interesting. I encourage young entrepreneurs to kind of keep an eye on our industry. I encourage our own industry to learn about technology. It's coming. It's coming. Right. It's going to be here. And the least you fight it and the more you endorse it, I think the better we'll all be.
Arush, thank you so much for sharing your insights and your expertise with us today. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you.
Thanks, Mahin. Great talking to you. And talk to you soon.
Thank you, listeners, for joining in on today's episode with Arush Shahi, the CEO of ACO Innovation Lab. We explored lots from the incredible potential of digital transformation, the role of tech in the housing crisis, to what lies ahead for AEC Innovation. A special thanks to our guests as well as to our partners, RBC, UPS, Constant Contact, IG, and Google for their invaluable support. For more inspiring content, please visit our website, canadiansme.ca, and subscribe to the magazine. Again, we'll see you in the next episode.
Thank you for tuning in to the Canadian SME Small Business Podcast. Your support fuels our passion for empowering Canadian businesses. Don't miss out on our next episode, filled with fresh perspectives and actionable strategies. Subscribe at CanadianSME.ca and be part of a community that's shaping the future of Canadian business. Until next time, keep innovating, growing, and making a difference.